So welcome, Sophia, to Christie Walk and to Adelaide Chronicles. It's a podcasting platform that I hold together people's stories. And we're doing this here, at Christie Walk, which is an eco-community built on Kaurna land. So I'll hand over to you now and have you introduce yourself.
Oh, thank you, Sue. I'm delighted to be here, especially at Christie Walk, as I was originally working on the Halifax EcoCity project, which later didn't get off the ground, and the spin-off of that was Christie Walk. So my name is Sophia Van Ruth. I work as a freelancer. These days, I help people get in touch with their embodied wisdom around issues, and I'm really interested in helping people deal better with complex issues by tapping into their embodied and intuitive knowledge. But I have a long history that led me up to that work. So I originally studied as an interior designer at the University of South Australia. And when I graduated, I didn't really feel that I fitted into that profession. I was finding a lot of the design offices to be quite shallow. They were often interested in whether you were getting your work in magazines or creating something very spectacular, and I was more interested in creating spaces that served people well and served planet well. And while there were some organisations doing that, I was struggling to find my place in that industry. And while I was kind of struggling to find my place, someone put me on to urban ecology. Someone put a brochure in my hand for the Halifax EcoCity project, and I started reading that and went, oh, This is what I want to be involved in creating in the world. So the Halifax EcoCity project was much bigger than Christie Walk. It was intended to be quite large up on Halifax Street. I can't remember exactly how many dwellings it was, but it was
300 or something?
Something like that, yeah. I think so. I have to go back and get the original brochure.
Yeah.
And it was a mixed-use development intended to have some kind of social things. I think we were looking at maybe having things like a cinema or having cafes and restaurants and some shops, some retail as well, potentially, and residential. But it really changed the way that I thought a bit about what creating a development could be. The thing that struck me the most, really, I mean, there were so many eco-design things that struck me. It was designed to have as little impact as possible on the planet. But the thing that really struck me was the turning the development model on its head, from creating a development and then inviting a community into it afterwards, to gathering the community together first and having them design how they wanted to live. And, you know, that turnaround for me was really inspiring. I thought, yeah, that's exactly how we should be doing it. We should be creating spaces for, you know, people should be co-creating their own spaces, for one thing. Yeah, creating spaces for the people who are going to live in them so that they suit what they want, and they're not kind of coming in afterwards and going, oh, I really hate that bathroom. And then they end up redoing it.
Or just accepting second grade because
the
developer says that's what you should have.
Yeah, and having these uniform houses. I loved the fact that everyone could have design elements in their home that were different and individual and diverse. And this really spoke to me. And I became involved in designing the kind of co-design processes. So I was helping facilitate a lot of the co-design processes. And that was an area that I really felt at home in. I thought, oh, this is so much better on interior design for me.
Did you have anything to do with that fabulous model?
Yes. Well, the one on the Halifax EcoCity project, there was one kind of very extensive one, and that one was already built before I came along. I was involved in building a 1-to-20 scale model of a few of the terrace houses because the large one wasn't on a human scale enough for the co-design processes. We needed one where you could take the roof off and you could, you know, have a look inside and get a more of a three-dimensional conceptual
understanding.
Yeah.
Do you know where it is now?
I don't actually. No, I don't know what happened to that. I think I'd already left Adelaide by the time that was, you know, they closed the Centre for Urban Ecology.
So did you have students working on it, or how did that model happen?
I'm not sure exactly how the model happened. It might have been because Paul Downton was a lecturer at the university, so he may have had students working on it. I know with the model that I built, there were volunteers working on it. And I guess a lot of us were just people like me who had gravitated towards it because we thought, yeah, that's the kind of architecture we want to see in the world. That's what we want to be involved in. And in those early days, you know, we were making very little money from it. No one in the organisation, even the founders, were really making much money from it.
We were pushing it, yes. Practically.
Yeah, not totally, but, you know, we weren't making significant amounts of money from it. We were giving a lot of our time on a voluntary basis because we just wanted to get it. We wanted to see it in the world. We wanted to get it realised.
And how much time?
I spent 2.5 years working there. Oh, I was working pretty much full time then for 2.5 years.
As a volunteer?
Not totally, but you know, I was working before and after work to pay the bills.
Yeah.
It was just something that I felt very passionate about. I think everyone in that organisation felt very passionate about creating this type of development. And I also related strongly to their idea that, you know, it's one thing to go out and build an eco-city outside of the cities, which is also a useful thing to do. But if the city's continuing to be this big polluting kind of engine, then that's not really solving the whole problem. So I was attracted also to the idea of trying to redefine how the city could be and create something much more in harmony with the
Did you think at the time you'd live in it?
I never thought I would live in it. I always knew I was going to travel. So, no, I didn't. It just didn't feel like a part of my reality. I knew I was going to be heading off, which I did, head off to various places around the planet after that. But it is the kind of thing, like if I look around Christie Walk now, I feel like, oh, I could feel so at home.
Yeah, because it couldn't have happened without that passion way back then.
Yeah.
It was getting all these like-minded people together that were passionate and would put in all that time.
Yeah. Well, I learned a lot. You know, I really learned a lot. I found it a transformative time in my life. It's one of the moments I look back on and think, well, that transformed me. That changed me. Mm. That really helped me grow in ways that, you know, I hadn't. And it exposed me to things I hadn't encountered before, ideas and ways of doing things.
You write in your bio that it shaped you.
Yeah, yeah.
And your future endeavours.
Yes, I think it did. I think it kind of set me on a path of realising that you could do things very differently, which I've continued.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was my introduction really to what... to environmentalism and to ecological, putting the ecology first. I'd had that kind of vaguely in my mind before that, but it really was transformative to come in and work on that level where they were really challenging everything to try and make it as ecologically sound as they could possibly think of at that time.
Mm. I think you and I first met in Whyalla.
Yes, I believe we did, even though I can't remember the exact moment.
No, me either. That's a while ago now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there was a ALQ, Roadlands Centre for Urban Ecology.
Yes, and I was a bit involved in setting that up and in their community engagement program that was run in Whyalla. And I think I helped set up the computer system for ALQ because one of the other things I ended up doing was running a bit of the computer system network in Adelaide in the Centre for Urban Ecology.
Okay.
Yeah, I did the website. I created the website. And
you came up to Whyalla?
Yes,
to do
I
that.
Did.
Yes.
Yeah, we came up a few times, I think, from memory. But it was a long time ago now.
Yeah.
Back in the 90s.
Whyalla. Development. Yeah, it was an opportunity completely missed.
Though. Yeah. I agree. It was really disheartening.
It's very disheartening. And particularly because things were actually bulldozed.
Mm.
Not, you know, it wasn't like the Halifax project, which never actually got off the ground.
Yeah.
It got off the ground.
And then it was knocked over.
And then was knocked over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, just
sort
tragic.
Of unbelievable, really.
Yeah.
But we have lots of interns coming in from all over the world, really. People would come in and work, and Paul would guide them. He sent quite a few of them up to Whyalla.
Yeah. Well, that's true. We did have those types of interns in
and they would have
Adelaide
learned
as well.
From that. And the fact that it was arid lands, there was a lot of people that were very interested in arid lands, environmentalism, and growing permaculture style plants.
Okay. So they were coming from arid countries. Oh, fascinating.
Yeah. So, I mean, they would have learned a lot, but, yeah, I don't know if they were ever told what actually happened in the end, but history now.
Indeed.
Yes, and we have this thriving community here that is not history, that came to fruition.
Mm.
And we have people like you to thank, in a way, for that as well, for the setting the groundwork.
Well, yeah, I'd like to think I made a contribution. Yeah. The first time I walked in here when it was finished, I cried.
Yeah.
Because I'd put in so much work, and the Halifax Ecosystem didn't get off the ground, and then to see something built was really emotionally overwhelming for me.
Mm. Yeah. So you knew Christy Ward before you left Australia?
Yeah, and it had been completed, I think. Oh, no, maybe it hadn't. I left in... When did I leave? Well, I went to Sydney. I left... it was completed before I left, because I left Adelaide for Sydney first, and I went there and I started working with community engagement projects primarily there for 10 years. And I left there, I went in about 1997, I think.
1997?
Yeah. And then I came, but I didn't leave Australia until 2007. So, and that's when I went to the UK to do a master's degree in holistic science, it was called, at Schumacher College in Devon in the south of England, which was also quite a radical ecological course and also a deeply transformative experience. That was my second transformative experience.
You've had a few along the way,
haven't you? Yeah, I have. I enjoy them, I must say. I think I might seek them out, really.
If I moved in to Christy Walk in 2006... It was finished, I think, in 2006.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So it would have been just before I left. Yeah, that's right. That's right, yeah. Because I came back to Adelaide for a short period to connect with my family again before I went further afield. And, I did come in during that period and it had just been finished.
I do remember when I met Paul and Cherie in Whyalla, the absolute feeling that whatever he designs, that's where I'm going to live.
Ha ha ha.
Because of the way that that he was talking about it, and because of the passion that you talked about that he had for making it happen.
Yeah, I found him a very inspiring person.
Mm. Way before his time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so what was the work you were doing in Sydney again?
Well, in Sydney I was working doing community engagement work. So when I was at Urban Ecology, one of the things that attracted me, like I said, was really working on the collaborative design processes. And so I started working with a woman there called Wendy Sarkissian, who did a lot of community engagement stuff. We were mostly hired in by local governments to work with local communities to kind of run processes to get them involved in planning issues and design issues for their local area. And I really loved that work, but sometimes it was quite intense, especially because Wendy had a reputation for being able to gain the trust of a community that was already quite angry with council and re-engage them in, you know, once council had decided, okay, all right, we're open to working with you, to build their trust back and re-engage them in a kind of a genuine participatory process. So we're often going into, situations where there was already a bit of anger. I think that was really a skill of hers.
Mm.
And she was very genuine and she was fierce in defending, you know, she wouldn't take on a job of genuine participants in the process. Mm. Basically, my understanding is the council planners in the block in Redfern Green, which meant that it was going to be turned into some kind of community or park usage. And then a lot of the it set this whole thing in motion because the Aboriginal population wanted a community centre for them, and there were other residents who were very opposed to that, and there was a lot of friction. And we ran a 9-month project there, hearing all the different sides and trying to bring them together to create something. Yeah, we did end up with a mixed-use site, a park and a community centre down the end. Yeah, and I went back there about a decade later and just sat in the middle of it and watched and thought, well, this seems all right.
And it's still working?
I don't know now, because the last time I went there was quite some time ago. But it was when I went back about a decade later.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Yeah.
And where did you go from there?
I had studied shiatsu during that time too, which is a Japanese type of massage, and it works with the meridian system, same as acupuncture. And so I was working as a shiatsu therapist like one day a week, and then I was doing a few days a week on this community engagement work. And I just felt like there's all these different areas of my life. I've done work with urban ecology, and now I've transitioned into community engagement more. And now I've learned shiatsu, which I think was my introduction to systems thinking, even though I didn't realise that at the time. Because they don't call it systems thinking, but they really do have a systems approach to the body, I think, and more of a understanding the body as a complex interactive system. And I could sense that, you know, there's a way of bringing these together, and I feel like I'm not really using them to my full potential, and I didn't really know how I was going to achieve this. And actually Wendy Sarkissian forwarded me a link for Schumacher College and said, why don't you just go and do a master's for a year and see if you can sort that out.
tell us what the Schumacher College is all about.
Well, Schumacher says they provide transformative education for a sustainable world, and I think they're not kidding, they do. They're located in this amazing place. Maybe I'll start with where they're located. They're located in Devon on the Duttington Hall Estate, which has a beautiful river running through it and deer are about the place, and 600-year-old kind of Hogwarts castle-y type building that we did lessons in. But we're a small college affiliated with Plymouth University that really focused on doing education differently as well. So we only had 13 students on the master's program. We all lived on campus or around campus. It was a very immersive program. And in addition to just learning in lecture theatres and things, we were doing a lot of interactive kind of action research style learning, I would call it. And, you know, we would have to be involved in the running of the college. So in terms of growing our own food as well, cooking, cleaning, all of those things were done by the students. So there'd be teams every morning where you'd be on the cooking team, or you'd be on a gardening team, or you'd be on a cleaning team. And the running of the college was also managed by us. And we could have a lot of, you know, exposure and involvement in how to make the college as green as possible. So they were trying to live their principles as much as they could. We were also allowed to dictate some of our syllabus. So if we felt like we wanted more of this kind of learning that we'd had a taste of, or if we felt like there was an element we wanted to bring in, there was a budget that we set what that learning was.
Wow, that is before its time.
Yeah. Yeah, and they were
participatory budgeting.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't a huge part at that time. It may be more now, because I remember them thinking, this is really working well. And they tended to attract people who were quite interesting as well as students. So a lot of the time we were running, you know, seminars and trainings for each other. I taught everyone shiatsu and I ran interplay classes. And I'll come to that in a minute, the interplay, because that's where I led on to next.
Can I just ask, was the focus on human well-being as well as the planet's well-being?
Yes, I would say so. Mm. Yeah.
So it was about harmony between all living beings.
Yeah. So, I mean, we had you know, doing deep ecology courses and learning about Gaia as the planet is one living organism called Gaia, and learning about, you know, a range of things that I'd already been exposed to around ecology and But then they were also incorporating subjects that I'd always kind of blocked out of my mind, like economy and, you know, that the economy is such a driver. So it also exposed me to a whole lot of other stuff that I hadn't been exposed to before. One of those things was complex systems science as well, really understanding how when multiple entities interact together, how, you know, spontaneous emergent pattern arises that's not easily predictable or understandable in terms of how you plan for healthy emergence versus unhealthy emergence. And really that was the thing that fascinated me the most out of that course. And that was as I started to, they made us do a lot of computer modelling to model complex systems and then run different iterations with different setups, starting setups, and see how different the pattern was that emerged and really start to get a feel for just how kind of non-logical, wasn't illogical, you know, but non-logical it was. I couldn't use my rational mind and my logic to understand and predict what was going to happen, but I could start to get a feel for it. And I felt like if we don't come to terms with also this kind of this interactive, complex nature of the world that we live in, I think we won't get very far trying to find our way towards a healthier balance if we're only using our rational, logical, intellectual ways of trying to solve the problem. We'll often create more problems that we didn't realise were coming up. So I started to realise that it starts to feel very important to me to help people connect with their felt sense more. And while I was studying complex systems science, the thing that was helping me make kind of a more embodied sense of it was my interplay experience. So I'd been doing these classes in Adelaide called, and in Sydney as well, called Interplay, which I was just doing for fun. It uses improvised movement and voice and story, and there's a lot of group improvisation, which of course is a little mini microcosm complex system. Mm. Lots of people interacting, patterns arise spontaneously. You have to get a feel for what's going on. You have to hone your improvisational skills. And these were all skills that struck me as really valuable in a complex world in general and something that we just don't focus on in our educational models and our... So, you know, I'd studied to be an interplay leader because there weren't any leaders in the UK active at that point and I didn't want to stop doing it. So I only did that just so I could keep doing it because it was bringing me so much. But when I said that I'd studied to lead it, the other students said, oh, can you do some for us? You're raving about it and saying how it helps you understand complexity. So I started running classes in the college. I ran a few and people really liked them. And that headed me into this whole new trajectory of creating workshops and learning experiences to help build skills in getting people more embodied, more in touch with their felt sense, more able to stick with the changing dynamics around them. So, that's really led me to where I am now. That's primarily what I do. I teach embodied practices to help people understand and work better with complexity, work more in harmony with the complex living world.
Do you still call it interplay?
Well, I use a lot of interplay in what I do, but that's not the only thing that I use, and I've been influenced by a few other things, and there are a lot of other practices I think that help do that, like social presence in theatre, which is spun out of the Theory U and the U Lab, if you've heard of that. The social presence in theatre is affiliated with that group. And things like arising out of the family constellations work. People are often doing something now called systemic constellations, which I think also helps you through your own body and felt sense get in touch with what's happening in a system, in a community or system that you're involved in. So I don't only use interplay, but I use primarily what I've learned through interplay. That's certainly the biggest thing I draw on. And I did have my own business doing this for quite some time. After I was at Schumacher College, I moved to the Netherlands. And there I set up my own business doing those, running those workshops and trainings. Since I've been back in Australia, I've joined with a group called the Wicked Elephants, And they've been doing kind of similar work in a lot of ways. They do have a large embodied component to the way that they operate, or the way that we operate, I should say now, because I've joined them. and I'm really enjoying working with this group. I find them very inspiring as well. So they're doing a lot of work around moving from me to we, and moving from individual into the collective. And so I've felt very strongly, okay, I've got a role to play in that with the work that I've been doing as well. How do we move from me to we? How do we understand the dynamics of we? And we meaning definitely in the Wicked Elephant sense, not only we humans, we is all living beings as well.
Mm. Yeah. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
So do a little plug for it.
For Wicked Elephants?
For what you do, yeah.
Well, we're trying to come up with a tagline right now, which is proving very difficult, I think, because it's kind of, I think when you do the embodied work, often people need to get a sense of it by doing a little bit of it before they really understand what it can bring them. But, yeah, we try and help people get in touch with their embodied wisdom to be able to better negotiate the difficulties like the uncertainty in their lives, the polarization that we're experiencing is another focus for the Wicked Elephants, and also nature, the connection to nature as well through your own embodied practice and your own immersive experiences.
And is story a big focus?
Definitely story is. It's certainly an integral part of Interplay and something I bring into the work that I'm bringing into the Wicked Elephants as well. But we do a lot of story apart from that. So they also have, there's a program called Wicked Stories that we've got running at the moment of people sharing story. I mean, story allows for some of the nuances that, intellectual problem solving misses. Mm. That fills in some of those gaps that I think help you get the broader, fuller picture of the complexity of the situation you're embedded in.
So how could people find out more if they wanted to?
We have a website, www.wicked-elephants.coop, COOP, because it's a cooperative structure that we're working within. And we have a mailing list as well. You can sign up to the mailing list from off of that website.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much.
That was really interesting.